Dana Sitahal didn't die in a random shooting. She was silenced. A senior prosecutor, former senator, and fearless legal analyst, Dana had built a career dismantling the very criminal underworld that would later ambush her in a coordinated military-style assassination. She wasn't just any lawyer. She was the lead prosecutor in one of the most explosive gang-related murder trials in Trinidad's history. Her murder wasn't just a hit. It was a message. Three cars boxed her in. Gunmen opened fire with military precision. Witnesses vanished. Cameras were disabled. Within hours, the island was paralyzed, not just by grief, but by fear. Who had the reach, money, and audacity to kill a state prosecutor in cold blood in one of the most surveilled parts of Port of Spain? And more importantly, who had the power to keep the masterminds hidden for over a decade? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Woman Who Knew Too Much. Port of Spain, Trinidad. May 4th, 2014. The city lights blinked across the damp asphalt, rain from earlier still glossing the streets. Dana Sitahal's silver Volkswagen SUV glided through the quiet avenues of Woodbrook. Just minutes past midnight, she had left the Marpao Casino, her usual late-night stop to unwind. Alone, no security, no escort, just confidence. And perhaps a dangerous assumption that her enemies wouldn't dare. But they did. Three vehicles coordinated like clockwork. A Nissan Wing Road pulled ahead to block. A panel van slid behind. Another car pulled alongside. Then came the bullets. Over 20, sprayed through her driver's side window. Witnesses described sharp bursts of automatic gunfire. No shouts, no warning, just surgical execution. Dana Sitahal was dead, and the nation would never be the same. Who was Dana Sitahal? Dana Sarup. Sitahal was a powerhouse, attorney, senior counsel, independent senator, legal columnist. She was a rare voice of unfiltered truth in Trinidad and Tobago's fractured justice system. By 2014, she had become a household name, respected by some, feared by others. She was outspoken in her criticism of both gang culture and political complacency. In her weekly legal columns, she often dissected cases involving state failure, corruption, and judicial inefficiency. But beyond opinion, she was also the special prosecutor in one of the most volatile murder cases in Trinidad's criminal history. The trial of 11 men accused of killing businessman Vindra Nepal Coolman in 2006. That case was a direct threat to some of the island's most powerful underworld actors. The Vindra Nepal Coolman case, a powder keg. Nepal Coolman was kidnapped from her home in December 2006. Her family paid a ransom. She was still killed. Her body was never recovered. The suspects, members of the Muslimin, a once radical group that had staged a violent coup attempt in 1990 and evolved into a feared gang network. Several of the men on trial lived in a compound in Laventil, one of Port of Spain's most dangerous neighborhoods. The trial had dragged on for years, bogged down by missing witnesses, legal delays, and intimidation. But Sitahal stayed the course, undeterred. When she was murdered in 2014, she was still mid-trial. The message was clear. No one was untouchable. The crime scene. Military-grade precision police described the hit as well-orchestrated and clearly professional. No shell casings were recovered, suggesting cleanup. CCTV footage in the area failed to yield suspects, suggesting tampering. Witnesses claimed they saw men in tactical gear, but those reports were either retracted or buried. Whoever carried out the hit had access to surveillance, high-grade weapons, escape routes, and intelligence. That pointed to more than just local gang activity. It pointed to a network. The aftershock Trinidad woke up to the news with disbelief. Radio shows opened with silence. Judges wept openly in courtrooms. Prime Minister Kamla Prasad Biswasar issued a statement calling it a dark day for justice. But no one seemed able, or willing, to say who might be behind it. Sitahal's death wasn't just tragic. It exposed something more chilling, that organized crime in Trinidad had evolved beyond corner boys and block turf. This was the level of cartel behavior, complete with silencers and systemic fear. The investigation, smoke and mirrors. Within weeks, the police released a list of 11 suspects. Most were from Eastport of Spain and were loosely affiliated with a gang known as the Rasta City. But questions immediately arose. If these men were street-level thugs, who coordinated the vehicles, who paid them, who supplied the weapons, why was there no footage of the getaway? In 2015, several men were arrested, including a taxi driver accused of scouting Sitahal's routine. But as the court proceedings began, one truth became clear. The real masterminds were never named. The Whisper Network, behind closed doors, lawyers, journalists, and off-the-record police officers shared the same theory. Sitahal was killed by a criminal political nexus. The whispers were terrifying. Some pointed to figures in high-end real estate, others to rogue intelligence agents. Some even believed Sitahal had been investigating a cocaine transshipment ring with connections to law enforcement. It was rumored she'd compiled a dossier, a personal file cataloging key players in the drug underworld who also had access to political protection. That file was never recovered. What she said before she died. In one of her final columns, Sitahal wrote, "We cannot pretend that the justice system is separate from the social disease that crime has become. When criminals feel protected by influence, lawlessness becomes law." Those words now read like a prophecy or a warning. Political fallout and fear parliament held a moment of silence. The judiciary demanded reform, but beneath the public grief was hesitation. Government officials refused to speculate about motive. State attorneys went silent. The legal fraternity offered cautious statements, wary of naming names. One lawyer described the atmosphere as a mix of grief and surveillance. Phones were tapped. Offices were swept for bugs. People feared that speaking out could make them the next target. The case stalls. By 2017, 8 men were formally charged in connection with the murder, but court delays, missing evidence, and conflicting statements eroded public confidence. The prosecutions focused narrowly on the gunmen and drivers, not the funders or coordinators. Defense attorneys painted the picture of a police force under pressure to solve the case, not necessarily to solve the conspiracy. To this day, not a single political or business figure has been charged in relation to Sitahal's death. The unanswered questions. Who gave the order? Was her assassination linked to the Nepal Coolman trial or something even bigger? Why did investigators avoid exploring financial transactions tied to known drug lords? Trinidad's media grew quieter over time, the public outrage cool. But in legal circles, one belief remains. Dana was getting too close to something too big. A system. Compromised. Sitahal's killing marked a dangerous precedent that even the most respected pillars of justice were within reach of Trinidad's criminal elite. For many, it confirmed the worst suspicion that gangs and legitimate institutions were no longer separate, that someone somewhere had written a prosecutor's death sentence and gotten away with it. And if that's true, who will speak up next? Chapter 2. The Invisible Architects. You don't orchestrate a high-profile assassination like that without big money, political protection, and technological cover. This wasn't street thuggery. This was a ghost operation. Former TTPS intelligence officer, anonymous source, a map with no names. In the immediate aftermath of Dana Sitahal's murder, Trinidad's government made a show of urgency. Condolences from the highest levels. Promises of swift justice, new intelligence task forces. But as the weeks turned into months, and the months into years, the focus narrowed. Authorities pursued the shooters, but not the financiers. Beneath the surface of the official narrative lay a web of names that rarely appeared in the press, but buzzed through secure phone lines. encrypted chats, and courthouse whispers. These names, politically connected businessmen, rogue customs officers, contractors with government ties, were rumored to fund a complex, quasi-invisible criminal economy. This was Trinidad's real power struggle. Not gangs versus the police, but a war between those who lived by the law and those who hid behind it. The real currency, cocaine. To understand why Dana Sita Hall had to die, one must understand the commodity that flows more freely in Trinidad than water in dry season, cocaine. Strategically located just off the northeastern coast of Venezuela, Trinidad and Tobago became a critical transshipment point in the Latin American drug corridor. Traffickers used speedboats, container ports, and even commercial flights to move product from South America to Europe and North America. But by 2014, something had shifted. The scale had grown. More product, more guns, more political interference. It wasn't just street gangs moving drugs anymore. It was a criminal consortium, an alliance of corrupt police, intelligence operatives, legal insiders, and businessmen laundering millions through construction casinos and phantom shell companies. And Dana Sita Hall, she knew it. The lawyer who knew too much. In the weeks before her death, Sita Hall had reportedly met with a foreign embassy official to discuss anomalies in the Nepal Coolman trial and beyond. A confidential source later revealed that Dana had requested information on regional anti-corruption agreements, particularly how they apply to transnational organized crime. She wasn't just preparing for court, she was preparing for war. Unconfirmed reports suggest she had compiled a private file detailing links between East Part of Spain gang leaders, two real estate developers, and a mid-level government official with alleged ties to Venezuelan trafficking routes. That file vanished after her murder. No copies have surfaced, but in legal circles, it is referred to by a chilling name, the LIS, Ghost Phones and Burner Networks. As investigators probed the men arrested for Sita Hall's murder, they made a curious discovery. The suspects used untraceable burner phones, activated and discarded within 24 hours. More troublingly, some of the numbers they contacted in the hours before and after the killing were linked to clean citizens, people with no criminal records, often in government contracts or customs. One of the SIM cards, retrieved from a storm drain near Beetham Gardens, was traced to a number last registered under a company associated with a retired law enforcement officer turned private security consultant. When questioned, the man denied involvement. The SIM was never used again. To this day, those burner phones represent the closest evidence of a link between the shooters and the possible masterminds. Corruption in uniform. Several months after Sita Hall's assassination, leaked internal memos from the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, TTPS, revealed a disturbing trend. Evidence tampering in narcotics cases, internal affairs investigations stalled or buried, police officers found with cartel-level cash in foreign bank accounts. More than a few officers suspected of leaking intelligence were quietly transferred or retired. No high-level arrests were made. One officer, who requested anonymity, said it plainly. "We didn't lose Dana to a gang. We lost her to the system. The entire thing is infected. And no one wants to name the virus." A pattern of silencing. Dana Sita Hall's murder was not isolated. Months before her death, a junior state prosecutor in San Fernando was ambushed but survived. In the 2 years prior, two journalists investigating corruption were found dead under mysterious circumstances. Both ruled accidental. And then there was the Toco file, an alleged police report on narcotics landings off the northeast coast, rumored to contain names of facilitators within the Coast Guard. The file was reportedly sent to the Office of National Security. It vanished. Sita Hall was known to have requested access to that file. Did she find it? Did she learn too much? The politics of fear. What truly stuns about Dana Sita Hall's assassination isn't just how she died, but how many people fell silent after. Senior attorneys withdrew from public commentary. judges increased private security. Members of parliament began dodging questions about organized crime. Even the media shifted. Stories about corruption or narco politics disappeared faster than they were written. Some outlets were allegedly offered advertising incentives to kill controversial stories. In the public sphere, a new phrase emerged. You don't want to end up like Dana, the trial that fizzled. In 2016, 8 men stood trial for Sita Hall's murder, but instead of a national reckoning, it was a slow-motion legal slog. Witnesses refused to testify. Some changed their stories. Forensic reports were inconclusive. Defense attorneys argued their clients were scapegoats, arrested under political pressure. No evidence ever emerged linking the accused to any high-level figure. The prosecution never addressed motive, and to this day, no mastermind has been named in open court. The real suspects, those who knew Sita Hall, her colleagues, friends, and investigative contacts, believe she was killed for touching nerves in 3 areas. Drug trafficking exposure. She linked gang leaders to a trafficking route passing through legitimate shipping channels, implicating at least 1 government subcontractor. Judicial complicity. She had expressed frustration that certain judges seemed afraid to rule, implying external influence. Financial crimes. Sita Hall had shown interest in unusual real estate transactions tied to a development project where gang figures were rumored to be laundering drug money. None of these leads were ever publicly investigated. International pressure. In 2018, a report from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, quietly referenced Sita Hall's murder as a case study in state vulnerability in small island developing states. It described the attack as indicative of organized crime's infiltration into justice systems. That same year, 2 foreign diplomats stationed in Trinidad were reassigned under security advisories. One was rumored to have met with Sita Hall in her final weeks. Even the U.S. State Department included her murder in its human rights report, an unusual move for a non-politician. But still, no new arrests, no new investigations, just silence. The legacy they tried to erase. Dana Sita Hall's funeral was attended by thousands. She was posthumously awarded the Order of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. Legal students still quote her. The Sita Hall Foundation offers scholarships in her name, but the justice she stood for, it remains compromised. And that is perhaps the most enduring legacy of her killers. Not that they pulled a trigger, but that they proved they could do it and walk away untouched. Final reflection. We live in a world where power is not always held by those in office, but by those in the shadows. The ones who don't need titles because they have silence. The ones who kill not just to remove a threat, but to remind everyone else that speaking truth carries consequences. Dana Sita Hall died, believing the law could win. But 10 years later, the question remains, who really runs Trinidad?